Hello and happy Sabbath. Hope you all are doing well. I want to thank Donna for that special music. It's very beautiful, so thank you for that. I think it always adds a nice touch to a service to have special music. Now, many of us today live at a very frantic pace, trying desperately to stay on top of everything going on in our lives. I know just last night we were over at Brandon and Val's, and Val was talking, I think, this morning about, you know, life seems to get busier, even more so than when she had young kids. She's busier even now, and I know Linda Ziegler has told me the same thing, and I think most of us in this room probably would kind of feel the same way, that life just seems to get more and more busy, and it's hard to keep up and stay on top of the things that we have. You know, technology and the advances that it brings, that it should make life simpler and easier, seems somehow to make us more busy and find more things to do with our time, and it's even harder to catch up. And most of us frantically scramble to get the things done throughout the week, and we sometimes stumble or even fall into the Sabbath at times, it seems like, trying to get everything done for the week. And with that, we can feel out of touch sometimes, out of touch with our spouses, out of touch with our families and our kids, and even more so sometimes out of touch with God as the busy week goes on. But within the Ten Commandments, God gives us a command, probably the most universally misunderstood and really, you know, misapplied commandment, about remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. You know, many people view the Sabbath as an ancient relic, something that was, you know, profitable for the time God gave it, but really doesn't have any symbolism for us today. Or they miss the practical implications that God gave with it, and they think that it's not realistic to follow the Sabbath in our society. Sometimes people think the Sabbath is on Sunday, and sometimes they think even just going to church for an hour on a Sunday fulfills this commandment that God gave us about the Sabbath. No, others think Jesus did away with the Sabbath and any other specifications that were given when he came and was on the earth. And other people view it as this negative thing, that when God gave it, it was a burden, and it's this terrible thing that limits our life and limits, you know, pleasure on certain days. The questions and opinions about this commandment seem to be endless. You know, did Jesus keep the Sabbath because he was Jewish, or did he actually break the Sabbath command to demonstrate oftentimes that the Old Testament and the Old Covenant was done away with? You know, these are questions that come. And what led to the Pharisees wanting to kill him so many times, connecting to the Sabbath? Now, did the Apostle Paul, in writing all the books he wrote of the New Testament, show that the Sabbath is no longer necessary and that we don't have to keep it anymore? These are questions that people ask and want to consider. Was the Sabbath condemned and changed in the New Testament church, or was it confirmed? Now, did God sanctify the Sabbath at the time he created Adam and Eve? Or did he first set it apart 2,000 years later at the Exodus? Was the Sabbath changed to the seventh day, to another day of the week? And if so, why and when did this happen? Now, why did God command a day of rest in the first place? What does it mean and what does it matter? Did he have a purpose for it? And if so, what was it? Is the Sabbath at all relevant for humankind today? Does it make sense for us to keep the Sabbath today? The questions go on and on. And we're going to answer all those questions today. No, I'm just kidding. I think we'd have to be here all day probably for me to even start answering all those questions. But today I do want to talk about the Sabbath. And I want to talk about what it means for us today. And we can't go through everything, all those questions I just asked. They all are valid questions and things that we need to study and understand. But why is there so much confusion about this one commandment specifically? Now, why is there so many questions and controversy over this one commandment? And I think it's because it's probably the most misunderstood out of all 10. Because the other ones, oftentimes, especially the later ones, are more straightforward about do not kill or do not commit adultery. But this one has quite a bit to say about the Sabbath and what it means for us, what it meant for the Israelites, and there's even future prophecies that talk about this day. And it can get confusing to understand exactly what it really means. So as I considered, you know, with my Bible, with my series of sermons on the Ten Commandments, as I got to this one, the more I studied and thought about what I wanted to talk about with the Sabbath, the more I realized that there are endless questions and endless topics that I could discuss with it. And I could probably come up with a 10-part series just on the Sabbath alone. And I won't do that, or I'd never get through the Ten Commandments. But I do want to look at a couple questions today connecting to the Sabbath and what it means for us. No other questions we could look at today would be, why is it from sunset to sunset? You know, that's not how we typically think about days. So why do we do it this way? Or we could look at the origins of the Sabbath in Genesis and Exodus, and how many times the Israelites broke the Sabbath, and why God continually said that was one of the main reasons that they were punished and sent to exile, is connected to them profaning God's Sabbath. We could look at how the Catholic Church very openly admits that they changed the Sabbath, and they think they're justified in doing that. And we could look at how the Sabbath is mentioned nearly 50 times just in the Gospels alone. That through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the Sabbath comes up 50 times, or approximately. That clearly it was relevant to the writers of the Gospel accounts for them to bring it in that many times. We could also go into the prophetical aspects of the Sabbath and what it pictures for the future of God's plan and the kingdom. We could look at all these different teachings and look at it from the different angles and the proofs we need to know that the Sabbath still exists today. And again, as I said, we can't cover all of that today, obviously. And as time goes on, I might bring up other sermons that address some of these issues. But today, I really want to focus on kind of three main points that we'll look at today to kind of bring the Sabbath, I think, a little bit more personal to us as individuals and as a church, and look at some specific commandments God gives us about his Sabbath and what it means for us today. To begin then, turn with me over to the book of Mark. We'll actually spend a decent amount of time in the gospel accounts as we look at the Sabbath. Mark chapter 2. It's one of my favorite quotes about the Sabbath. And it kind of sets the framework for the rest of the message today as well. Mark 2 and verse 27. We'll kind of just jump to the end of this a little bit. So Mark chapter 2 and verse 27. It says, "And he," talking about Jesus Christ, "said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath.'" So Christ makes this statement. He says, "The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath." He starts making a point that he kind of teaches all through the Gospels, that the Sabbath was supposed to be a benefit for mankind. The Pharisees, as we'll talk about in a little bit, took it to the other extreme, that they made it a burden, that it was one of the hardest things for people to follow was the Sabbath at this time, because the Pharisees added all these restrictions to what the Sabbath meant. But Christ here says the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. And he shows a couple of things within this. He first says that God made the Sabbath. No, it was made for man. And that reminds us that just because it's made for man doesn't mean that man has the right to change it. That it was made for us. That it was made by God for us. And we'll look at other scriptures that confirm that point as well in just a minute. This is God made it for us because with him being our creator, he knew that we needed it. And that's kind of the first point, and it lays the foundation to all this, that it was made for our benefit. But it's interesting that God didn't say, or Christ here didn't say, the Sabbath was made for Israelites, or the Sabbath was made for the Jewish people. He says the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. I think it makes a very big point here, that first he says, you know, it was made for man. It's supposed to be a benefit for man. It's not a burden. It's supposed to be a benefit and a blessing. But then he goes on to say, you know, he says it's for man. For mankind is really what that word implies. That it's for everybody. And one common belief about the Sabbath is that, you know, it's a Jewish or it's an Israelite day. And that Christ only kept it because he was a Jew. But this time, Christ right here says very specifically, it was made for mankind. It was made for all of people. There's a couple other translations that I think make it interesting as well. The Good News Bible says in this verse, "The Sabbath was made for the good of human beings." That's really the point Christ was making here. That it was made for their benefit and that it was made for all of mankind. The New English Bible says the Sabbath was made for the sake of man. The Williams New Testament says the Sabbath was made to serve man. It's kind of a different way to look at the Sabbath, but we think it's a way that God gave us a blessing, that it serves us in the sense that it makes our life more meaningful. It gives us a day of rest physically. It rejuvenates us spiritually and gives us time to spend with our families and extra time with God. The New Living Translation says the Sabbath was made to benefit people. It's very simple wording, but that's really, I think, gets to the heart of it. That it's for all of people, and it's for the benefit of people. And as we think about the Sabbath today, I think that should lay the foundation of everything else we think about. That as we look at the laws that God gives us about His Sabbath and the requirements that He gives us, that all of it fits within this framework that is for our benefit, that it's for our blessing, and that God made it because He knew we needed it, and it was something that would benefit us as humankind. Again, not just us in the church, but God would love if everyone kept His Sabbath, as there are blessings that come with Sabbath keeping. We see this whole idea kind of laid out in Deuteronomy chapter 4, because all of God's blessings serve this point of being, or all of God's laws serve this point of being a blessing. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 5. No, very specifically, God there said the Sabbath was made for man. But really, all of God's laws were made for man to be a blessing. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 5. Deuteronomy 4 and verse 5. It says, "Surely I have taught you statutes and judgments, just as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should act according to them in the land which you go to possess. Therefore be careful to observe them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples who will hear of these statutes and say, 'Surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people.'" So here Moses is reminding the Israelites, he says, these are wonderful commandments that God has given you. And within that includes the Sabbath. In verse 7 he continues, "For what great nation is there that has God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us, for whatever reason we may call upon Him? And what great nation is there that has such statutes and righteous judgments as are in all this law which I set before you this day?" So Moses is reminding them, as he's reminding the people of God's laws, he said, what an amazing blessing it is that God has given you His laws, His way of life to live by. That the creator of the universe, the creator of mankind, gave the Israelites kind of the first copy of His manual. That God was working very directly with the people of Israel. You know, in extension, He wanted to work with all of mankind, but He began His work with Israel. So I gave you kind of the manual how to live. The manual that's going to lead to the most beneficial, the most blessed life you could have, both physically and spiritually. And one big aspect of that law that He gave them was the Sabbath. That He often went around and talked about how important the Sabbath was for His people. And it's interesting, well after this time in Deuteronomy, around 605 BC, the nation of Israel was conquered by the Babylonian people, and the nation was taken into captivity. That's the time when the book of Daniel kind of goes on, where Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were all taken to Babylon, and they're before King Nebuchadnezzar. That's because the whole nation was taken, and the people were sent over to Babylon, at least especially the wise men that the king wanted to use. And so that's around 605 BC that this happens. And the Israelites are there, especially the Jewish people, for a couple hundred years, some longer, some less, as there are certain waves that came back. And those would be people like Ezra and Zerubbabel and Nehemiah that eventually come back and start rebuilding the temple in Jerusalem. And this is kind of, these things set the stage for what happens when Christ returns to the earth. Because here in Deuteronomy, Moses is reminding them of this importance of keeping the Sabbath. And then years later, the people were taken captive and led to another land because they refused to obey God's laws. These laws that Moses is reminding them right here are so valuable. They refuse to keep them, and God punishes them by letting Babylon and King Nebuchadnezzar overthrow their nation and take them into captivity. But God in his mercy works out a plan that lets them return to their land of Israel hundreds of years later. And they return about 400 or so years, 400 to 500 years before Christ comes on the scene. Israelites are slowly in waves coming back to this land. They start rebuilding the temple. But what happens, as these people come, they read the prophets. They read Isaiah, Ezekiel, the minor prophets, and they read over and over how often God says, you know, these things came upon you because you broke my Sabbath, because you profaned my Sabbath among the nations. And out of that, the people were so afraid to ever be punished the same way by God, they started putting regulations on God's Sabbath. They said, you can only walk so many feet from your house on the Sabbath. I can only carry these certain things on the Sabbath, because they wanted to make sure that they never profaned God's Sabbath again and were punished as they knew their fathers were, and that's why God allowed Babylon to come and take them captive. And all these man-made regulations were imposed on the Sabbath, and if you look in the Jewish, you know, books and their law, that they have tons and tons of commandments that were not from the Bible, that don't have biblical foundations, that they established as kind of safeguards around the Sabbath. Because they said, we never want God to punish us again for breaking his Sabbath. And when Christ does come on the scene, you know, we're reading Mark 2, when he says the Sabbath was made for man, he's really addressing this idea that the Sabbath had become a burden. That the Jewish people, especially the Pharisees, had made all these laws and said, the Sabbath, we have to protect the Sabbath. So we're going to put all these laws and all these regulations around God's Sabbath. All these regulations that God never instituted to make sure that we never come close to breaking his law. And when Christ comes, and he often has these fights with the Pharisees over and over, they're fighting about the Sabbath. It's never about Christ trying to do away with the Sabbath and the Pharisees defending it. But it's about Christ defending what the Sabbath was made for, that it was made for man. That's kind of the foundation of all the arguments the Pharisees and Christ have about the Sabbath. He's bringing back what the Sabbath was meant to be, that it was a blessing, that there are good things supposed to happen on the Sabbath. Where the Pharisees were all about making sure no one broke the Sabbath by these man-made regulations that were going on. And so the first point, and I think as I said, is the underlying theme of everything today, was this fight between Christ and the Pharisees about the Sabbath, about the fact that the Sabbath was to be a blessing, just like we read here in Deuteronomy, that the laws of God, including the Sabbath, are a blessing to the people. It's about a better way to live, about having the right way to live that God wants us to have. And with that, let's turn back to the book of Mark, actually, in Mark chapter 3. We'll kind of pick up the story right where we left off. Because Christ continues this idea about the Sabbath and what it was meant for right after he makes these statements. So go back to Mark 3 as we wrap up this first point about the Sabbath as a blessing and it's supposed to be a benefit. Mark 3, again, I'll start reading in Mark 2:27 because really these things flow right together. Verse 2 and verse 27 again says, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath. And then notice chapter 3 begins. And he entered the synagogue again, and a man was there who had a withered hand. So they watched him closely, whether he would heal him on the Sabbath. So again, coming right back to this principle of the Sabbath. It says, so they watched him closely, whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, so they might accuse him. And he said to the man who had the withered hand, step forward. Then he said to them, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil? To save life or to kill? So again, he says, is it lawful to do this? Now, they may have been thinking, based on their own laws, was it lawful? But Christ was saying, is it lawful to the commandments of God? To do good or to kill? He's teaching them what the Sabbath was made for. Right after he says that he is the Lord of the Sabbath, he's going to teach them a very important lesson about what the Sabbath is for. So again, he says, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil? To save life or to kill? It says, but they kept silent, and when he had looked around at them with anger, being grieved by the hardness of their hearts, he said to the man, stretch out your hand. And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored as whole as the other. Then the Pharisees went out and immediately plotted with the Herodians against him, how they might destroy him. So again, as the backdrop of this idea that Christ says the Sabbath is a blessing for mankind, he then asks, should we be doing good or evil on the Sabbath? And they won't even answer him because they don't understand the lesson he's trying to teach. Now, I always find it interesting that it says that Christ, one of the few times that really says Christ was angry, that he was so upset that they couldn't understand what the Sabbath was for, that the Sabbath was to be the most amazing blessing that God gave mankind. It was supposed to be one of the most amazing things of God's law was this Sabbath, this day of healing, of restoration. And he's angry that they can't get it and that they're so stuck in their ways that they refuse to understand that the Sabbath is a blessing. And so he heals the man, and the man is healed, again showing that the Sabbath is supposed to be a blessing to mankind, that it's supposed to be a day of good things, not a day of burdens and regulations and restrictions, but a day of healing and a day of blessings and happiness. So again, point one as we continue on today, is that the Sabbath was made for man, and it is a blessing. That's a blessing to all of mankind, anyone who chooses to obey it. And as I said before, just a reminder within that, like just because it was made for man doesn't mean that man has control over it. That God made it for man, and God is still the one who controls what day it's on and how it's to be kept. So God says, I made this for you, and this is how you're supposed to keep it. So now, from that perspective, let's look at a couple of things that God commands with the Sabbath to make it a blessing for us. We can go back to Exodus 20 and verse 8. Again, we're going through the Ten Commandments. This is kind of in that step. So we'll go to Exodus 20 and verse 8. We'll actually see where this is listed in the Ten Commandments. Because God gives one of his big, big lessons of what the Sabbath is for at this point. Exodus 20 and verse 8. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the seventh day and hallowed it. And there's actually so much written in this little section. First off begins that it's a day of rest. That's something I think when we think about the Sabbath, probably one of the first things that come to mind is that it's a day of rest. It says we shouldn't do work. And that doesn't mean that we can't get out of bed and we can't do our things that get us through the Sabbath. But the lesson here is that we should put away our normal day-to-day chores, our normal day-to-day jobs, and put those things aside to set this as a special holy day that God says. That we should refrain from our normal work and our jobs and our weekly chores, all those things that we can do on those other 6 days. God says should be done those days. It's interesting, as he comes to the end of that though, he also points them back to the creation. That he says in verse 11, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. So again, as he's talking about this commandment, when he says remember the Sabbath, he then points them back all the way to the beginning of creation. He says, remember that God made this, that I made this at the very beginning. That's really the first commandment that we'd see written in the whole Bible would be the Sabbath. That God says, from the beginning, right after mankind was made, I began the Sabbath. And it's been perpetual from that day on. Every 7 days is his Sabbath. And I also thought it was interesting. I looked up that word remember, how this commandment begins. And it actually means to mark or to bring to remembrance. It can also mean to think on or set it aside as special. So it's all this idea that this day should have, you know, should be marked as special or different as we think about it. That when we look at our weekly schedule, this day should stand out as something different. That it should be marked, maybe we don't physically mark a calendar, but at least in our minds, it should be marked as a special time. Because God, twice in this, says it's holy. And that word holy itself means sanctified or set apart or dedicated for something special. That God says he set the Sabbath apart as something special, that he dedicated it as a special day, and that we should remember that. And again, he points Israel back as he says, remember. I think that remember kind of has two folds. So that we remember the Sabbath as it comes every week, but then again, that we remember what God did for us, that he is our creator. That the Sabbath should bring to us a remembrance that he is our creator, that he created us along with everything else on that first week. That we remember the Sabbath and everything that it pictures. And I think in the church, through history, as we talked about Sabbath, we put quite a bit of emphasis on not working on the Sabbath. And rightfully so, as that's clearly a commandment God has for us. But if we think about it, we can not work, we can take a whole day of not doing anything, and still not be keeping God's Sabbath. That's not just enough not to work, but there's so much more to it than that. I think sometimes in the past people have confused the day of rest maybe with a day of idleness. That this idea of resting doesn't mean that it's just a day to lounge around and not get out of bed or sleep all day if we want, and that's what God intended this day for. And as much as it's nice to get a little extra rest on the Sabbath and be a little bit slower pace, that's nice, but that's not really the full extent of what this day of rest really pictures. We're talking this morning, I don't know if Whitney and I even get that extra sleep anymore at the Sabbath as our kids. We haven't trained them to sleep in on the Sabbath yet. We're still working on it, but maybe one day, but not yet. And so this idea of having a little extra rest or slowing down on the Sabbath is a nice thing, and I think God definitely intended that for the Sabbath. But if we stop this idea of rest there, we really miss what rest really signifies on this day. Because if we think about it, there's a lot more to it than just that, than not just working and having a day to slow down. And actually, in some ways, as we'll look in a minute, it's actually a day to work and a busy day in one other sense. Turn with me to the book of John, chapter 5. Again, going to the gospel accounts as we look at this. John 5 and verse 1. So there's a whole other account here of Christ healing someone on the Sabbath. Notice we kind of read through this whole account just to get some context. John 5 and verse 1. It says, after this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of sick people, blind, lame, paralyzed, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain time into the pool and stirred up the water. Then whoever stepped in first after the stirring of the water was made well of whatever disease he had. So it's setting the stage for this certain place in Jerusalem where this pool, certain times, it doesn't say exactly when, that this water would be stirred up, and it would be significant that whoever walked into that water would be made well. That there's a miracle that was going on at this pool at certain times. And verse 5 picks it up. It says, now a certain man was there who had an infirmity 38 years. So for 38 years, he'd been at this pool waiting to be healed. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he'd already been in that condition a long time, he said to him, do you want to be made well? You know, that would seem like a silly question to the man, probably, as he's sitting at that pool waiting. But Christ was starting to teach a lesson. So the sick man answered him, sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. But while I am coming, another steps down before me. Jesus said to him, rise, take up your bed, and walk. So the man says, you know, clearly he wants to be made well, but he can never get to the pool in time before someone else steps in and is healed. So Christ says, rise, take up your bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made well, took up his bed, and walked. And notice the next section, and that day was the Sabbath. Again, the gospel accounts record actually seven times when Christ specifically healed someone on the Sabbath. They make a point to teach that lesson that God, that Jesus Christ healed on the Sabbath. So it says, then continuing in verse 10, the Jews therefore said to him who was cured, It is the Sabbath. It is not lawful for you to carry your bed. So the first thing, this man, he may have been walking to the temple to praise God that he'd just been healed, and he has this mat they'd been laying on it. It wasn't a bed as a mattress like we would think of, but probably some type of almost like just a small mat that we'd roll out to have underneath a sleeping bag, or just a small cloth, something that to get him up off the ground. So it wasn't a mattress that this guy was lugging around on the Sabbath, but the small bedroll that he was carrying with him. And right away, the Jews say, you know, you can't carry that on the Sabbath. What are you doing? Again, showing their focus on the Sabbath was solely on trying to prevent them from breaking the Sabbath, of those regulations that they had instituted. So it says, so Christ tells them again in verse 12 to take up your bed and walk. In verse 13, oh, I'm sorry, I just skipped down a little bit. So going back to verse 10, it says, the Jews therefore said to him who was cured, it is a Sabbath. It is not lawful for you to carry your bed. He answered them, he who made me well said to me, take up your bed and walk. Then they asked him, who is the man who said to you, take up your bed and walk? So they completely ignore the fact that he just said, the man who made me well said this. The only thing they cared about, who said you can carry your bed on the Sabbath? And so he says, it says, but the one who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, a multitude being in that place. Afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, see, you have been made well. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. And we don't know the backdrop to the story of what made Christ say that, what was in this man's past or what happened. But Christ says, you know, sin no more because you've been healed. Verse 15 says, the man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well. So again, we see the story of Christ healing someone on the Sabbath. And there's all these kind of things in the background between the Pharisees and Christ, of them, again, being upset that he did things on the Sabbath. Then verse 16, it says, for this reason the Jews persecuted Jesus and sought to kill him, because he had done these things on the Sabbath. Then notice verse 17. But Jesus answered them, my Father has been working until now, and I have been working. And after this, the Jews, in verse 18, says, therefore the Jews sought all the more to kill him, because he not only broke the Sabbath, but also said that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. So not only were they upset that he, in their mind, broke the Sabbath by healing someone, but now he's saying that God was his Father, and that they both had been working. And it made the Pharisees extremely upset. But I think it teaches us a lesson about the Sabbath, about this idea of not working. That this idea of a day of rest is symbolic of not going to our typical jobs and doing those things and having some extra physical rest on this day. But Christ makes a point here that there's still work to be done. That God the Father works and that Jesus Christ work every day and even on the Sabbath. And if we think about it from that regard, I think we might view this rest on the Sabbath a little differently. That as it is a time to rest from our normal work, we actually should be very active spiritually. That it should be an active day spiritually. That's an active day to do good things. As we see Christ often healed, no, we don't have the power to go around and just healing people. But we do have the power to make the Sabbath special, to be focused on being active. That it should be an active day of rest. That's kind of what I labeled point two, actually. Not just a day of rest, but an active day of rest. That we should be actively doing things on the Sabbath as well. Again, that we could not work and rest on the whole Sabbath, and we still could not be keeping the Sabbath if we miss this aspect of what Christ is teaching us here. That it should be a day of active rest, or an active day of rest. Because we should actively be working on our relationship with God. We should be working on spending extra time with our family as God gives us a break from work. And we should be very active in our fellowship and our time with brethren on the Sabbath. All those things are important factors that come on God's Sabbath. that we should be actively building those relationships, and that is a part of what God expects on his Sabbath. That as we rest from our typical weekly duties, we fill that time with productive things that he commands us to do, to be doing God's work on his Sabbath by building relationships with him and with the brethren and with our families. Notice over in Isaiah chapter 58, one of the probably most common scriptures connected to the Sabbath. Isaiah 58 and verse 13. Isaiah 58 and verse 13. Notice it says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words. Then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth. I feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. I find it interesting as we read this, it can sound like we shouldn't do anything that's good. We should just sit and do nothing. But if we actually break it down a little bit, notice how many times it says, it begins with saying what you shouldn't do. It says, not your own way, not your own pleasure, not your own words. That it repeats the statement that he doesn't say we shouldn't be doing things, but instead the things that we should be doing shouldn't be focused on ourselves. That he says, again, that we shouldn't be doing things our own way on his Sabbath, not things for our own pleasure, and not things of our own words. That we shouldn't be speaking idle, random things on his Sabbath, his special time. But again, within all those things he says we shouldn't be doing of ourselves, he talks about how we would delight in God and that it would be the special, honorable time. And I think it draws again that point that it's not a day to do nothing as can be thought of sometimes. But again, it's a day to rest from the things that we are used to doing, the things we're used to thinking about and talking about. And it's an active day of doing it God's way, that we put our own things away, our own pleasures, our own way, our own words. And that this day should be filled of God's way, of God's pleasure and God's words. That's what we should fill the Sabbath with. Again, that as we do the resting from our jobs, that we're active in doing it God's way. That because the active part of the Sabbath, I think, is as important as the resting part for our normal work. That really ties into, again, what Christ talked about in Mark chapter 3, about it's a day of rest, but that it's a blessing for mankind, and that it's a day to do good. That if we miss that aspect of the Sabbath, then that resting really only has physical benefits. So we miss the spiritual benefits that the Sabbath is really symbolic and more important in a lot of ways. That those normal stresses of life and things, when we take a break from those, it should fill our day and give us time to fill it with doing God's pleasures and God's work and God's way. That's really what the Sabbath is focused on. An active day of rest, an active day of God's way as we rest from the wear and tear of our jobs and our normal chores and the things that drain us as we go throughout the week. He says, put all those things away and focus on my way for this day specifically. And when we do that, when we're active in God's way, I think it's even more recharging and energizing than resting all day. That I know when I miss a Sabbath, I know last week we had to all miss because we all were sick. And that the Sabbath honestly isn't as rejuvenating and refreshing when we're at home by ourselves, not able to fellowship and do some of the other things that God tells us to do on the Sabbath. That as we're active in doing it God's way in his Sabbath, that the blessings of rest, I think, are actually magnified to what he expects and what he gives to us through that. So again, point two today as we talk about the Sabbath is that it's an active day of rest. And my third point today, we'll look over in Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus chapter 23. I sometimes think we only go to Leviticus on the other holy days, but we forget that the Sabbath is listed here as well with all the other holy days, because it's as holy as the other days are as well. Leviticus chapter 23. I'll begin in verse 1. It says, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, The feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts." So this introduction to this section, God makes it very clear. They're the feasts of the Lord. Again, not feasts of the Israelite people, not feasts of the Jews, but they say the feasts of the Lord, God's feasts. He said, "Which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations." And then again reiterates, "These are my feasts." God says, "These are my days, my special days." And he says, "They're holy convocations." And then we see right after that, the first one God mentions as his feast and his holy convocation. "So 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings." So God again reiterates that it's a Sabbath to the Lord, that it's God's Sabbath every week, that seventh day is God's Sabbath. And he puts it on the same plane as all the other holy days that are about to be mentioned. That Pentecost, trumpets, atonement, all these days that we think of as high holy days, they're no more special, no more holy than this weekly Sabbath that we have. That sometimes because we have the Sabbath so often that we have 52 of them a year, we sometimes forget that it's as significant in God's plan of salvation as all the other holy days. That it's a special day that God gives us once a week. That no matter what's going on, we know that the Sabbath is coming. Again, sometimes it feels like we might be stumbling or even falling into the Sabbath. But it's such a blessing to know that we only have to go 6 days until we can get to that next Sabbath. So point three is that the Sabbath is a holy day. It's a simple point, but I think it's a good reminder that the Sabbath is a holy day. And with that, kind of point 3a, let's say, is that it's a holy convocation. That God reminds us it's a Sabbath day and it's a holy convocation. That it's as holy as all the other holy days, and that he commands a convocation just like he does in all of his other holy days as well. That God puts that very clearly. The Sabbath is a holy day, a holy convocation. God's holy sacred assembly has to happen on his Sabbath as he commands with his church every week. And that's why we're here now at his appointed time. And it's interesting if we think about that. That word convocation isn't a word that we often use nowadays. But that word convocation really just means an assembly. So it says it's a holy assembly or a holy meeting. That God literally on the Sabbath says he's calling a holy meeting every Sabbath. And he expects us, he expects his children to be there. And as I think about that, you know, it raises an interesting question. So if we don't come before him on his holy day, on his sacred time, either by not coming at all or, as some do, choosing a different day, are we really keeping his Sabbath? If we choose to keep a Sabbath at home for the sake of just wanting to have a day not to go to church, I would question whether that's truly keeping his Sabbath, as he says here. You know, I know there's exceptions with sickness and other things going on, so I'm not saying if we ever miss a Sabbath. I mean, I just told you we missed last week, so clearly that's not my point. But the point is, God puts a lot of emphasis on saying, be here at my meeting, that he calls a holy assembly every Sabbath. And that God says it's his day, not ours. So it's his meeting, we don't set the terms. He says, come on my Sabbath for my holy assembly, my holy meeting that I set up. He commands us to meet as family, and he commands us, as we look at examples, that God says it's a day of teaching, that his Sabbath is a day for teaching, a time for prayer and fellowship and worship of him. And it's a time for especially fellowship of believers as we come together. And most of all, it's a time for his presence to be with us. That as we hear in the opening prayers, we ask for God to inspire the messages. We ask for him to lead the services. No, we don't just say those things out of a repetition, hopefully, but we say it because we believe that this is his meeting, that we're here not because the church says we have a meeting at this time, but because God says this is his meeting. That we might, in a way, set the hall and pick the time, but if we really believe that it's God's meeting, then in the end we're saying this is his meeting, his time, his hall, like we're here to to worship Him on His holy day. And that's really what this comes down to. Now, I think if we think about it then, you know, I was thinking about some analogies with this, that in a way, it'd be no different than, you know, the President of the United States or the President of our company saying, you know, every Monday we're going to have a 9 o'clock, you know, meeting, and I want everyone there. And I think if that was the case, if our CEO told us that of the company, or if the President said, you know, I want you at this meeting, I want to meet with you, that we'd probably do everything in our power to be at that meeting, that we would take that very seriously. But how much more so the King of the universe, the Creator of the universe says, on my Sabbath, I want to have a meeting with you, that I command you to come to this meeting. And when we think about it that way, again with this analogy of a CEO or a president, I think we'd probably make sure we're there on time. We'd probably leave as early as we could to make sure we're not late, because who would want to be late with a meeting with our boss or the president of our company or the president of the United States? You know, we all would do everything we could to make sure we're at that meeting on time, because the person calling that meeting, we hold in high respect. And we probably would come to that meeting, you know, dressed our nicest, again, showing respect for that person. That as we think about this, if we remember that this holy convocation is God's appointed meeting, that it's Him calling this meeting and we're here because He calls it, I think it changes our perspective sometimes from, well, we're just getting together for a Sabbath service. That it's kind of, you know, we do this every Sabbath, it can become very, you know, very calm and normal, and we lose the respect sometimes of remembering that this is God's meeting that He's called us to every Sabbath. And as we think about it in that respect, I think it changes how we think about the hymns that we sing. It changes, you know, our physical and spiritual mindset as we come, about how we dress, when we come, and the seriousness of this meeting that we ask that God's presence be at, because it's the meeting that He has called us to. And it also ties into the book of Hebrews a little bit. Paul kind of magnifies this idea. Hebrews 10 and chapter 23. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 23, I mean. Now, as we consider this holy convocation as God's appointed meeting for us, that we're here not because the church says we have church at this time, but because it's God's Sabbath for us, His holy convocation that He calls us to. And again, it's a holy convocation, meaning it's set apart by God. Only God can make something holy. So if this is His holy convocation, it's because He's here and that He has made it holy. That us choosing a location and choosing a time doesn't make it a holy convocation. It's only a holy convocation is if God is the one running the convocation. If God is here running His assembly that He's called us to. And with that, one important aspect of that convocation is here in chapter 10 and verse 23 of Hebrews. Notice what it says here. It says, "And let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. For He who promised is faithful. And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works." And then notice verse 25. "Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching." I think the Apostle Paul here is tying in one very important aspect of this convocation, is this assembling together. He says, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, not taking for granted this holy convocation that God calls us to, the time that He calls all of His children together, whatever congregation we're in, and says, we're going to have a holy meeting, and in that He expects us to fellowship, to assemble together and spend time together as family, as children. I know as I've moved away from my family, I know my parents, every time we come in, the first thing they do is invite all my brothers to come over. And when we get there, by the time we get to my parents' house, usually all my brothers and their kids are there. Because I think parents love to see their kids together. I think it's a natural thing. I think as we get older, we'll probably see that more with Dexter and Ellie. But my parents very much make the point every time we go home to visit that the brothers and their families are there when we get there. And I think it's no different with God, that He says, when I call you together on my Sabbath, He expects us to be together, that He expects to see His children together, spending time together, getting to know one another. Because that's one very important part to God, and one important part is, as a church, as a family, is that fellowship of spending time together and getting to know one another. Now, keeping God's Sabbath is very important to Him. We didn't go there, but we could go through Ezekiel and Isaiah and look at all the many times it talks about that God says, you know, Israel profaned my Sabbath, and that's one of the big reasons they were punished. And God says it's very important to Him, and it's actually one of the signs of the people of God. Turn me over to Exodus chapter 31 and verse 13. We see one time God says this. Exodus 31 and verse 13. That us coming before Him on His Sabbath and keeping His Sabbath is a very important thing to God. Exodus 31 and verse 13. I'll begin in verse 12, because it says, And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, So it says, the Lord spoke these words to Moses. Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, Surely my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you, throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. So God says, the Sabbath is a sign between me and you, that when we come before God on His Sabbath, it's a sign, it's a reminder to us of the relationship that we have with our Creator. He says it's a sign of our relationship that we have with Him. And it's a very important thing. And also that word sign, as I was looking it up, also can mean a beacon or a monument. That when it says the Sabbath is a sign, means the Sabbath is a beacon. It's a beacon, I think, in a couple of terms. In a way that it makes us stand out to the rest of people. I think one of the easiest and most quickly things that identifies us as different is that we keep the Sabbath. Not only do we keep it on Saturday, but we keep it from sunset to sunset. And we keep it by not working for that period and having a convocation and all the things that we do to keep the Sabbath. It is a beacon in the sense that it sets us apart. That it's easy to see that we're different. But I also think it's a beacon in the sense that it's a beacon of hope. That when we think about the Sabbath, it reminds us of our relationship with God. No matter how bad our week's going, I think we sometimes look towards that beacon of that Sabbath and saying, you know, I only have to get through two more days of work and I can get to the Sabbath. That it's a beacon of hope as well. That it reminds us that there's something waiting for us that's better. No matter what kind of difficulties we're going through in life, whether it's health problems or challenges with our jobs or our families, that it's a beacon and it's a reminder that God has a promised day of rest waiting for us. But the Sabbath is a day of hope, a beacon of hope for us and for all of mankind. Again, we can go through all the examples of the healings that Christ performed on the Sabbath, connecting it to that blessing. We looked at Mark and we looked at John, and we could look at Luke 13. I thought about going there, but I won't, just for sake of time. Another time where God heals on the Sabbath, showing that, and He says again, the Sabbath is supposed to be a blessing, a day to do good, reminding us that the Sabbath is a day of hope, a day of blessings. And as we consider this, I think in those seven times that Jesus is recorded healing on the Sabbath, it leads us to this idea that the Sabbath connects not only to the past and in Israel, and it has connections for us to the future, but it also, I'm sorry, the present, but it also connects us to the future. It reminds us that God is our Creator, and it reminds us of the covenant we have with Him, looking to the past. And in the present, it makes us stop and put everything away and focus on Him and His holy day and His people. But it also gives us a day to think about the future rest and the peace and the healing that God has in store for mankind. The Sabbath really connects the creation all the way to God's millennium, that kingdom that we're waiting for. If we think about it, that it's listed in Genesis chapter 2 as it's at the creation, and it has prophecies that we'll look at one example in a minute, that ties it all the way in to the end of God's plan for mankind, of that rest, of that kingdom that we're waiting for. And we can look at that over in the book of Hebrews chapter 3. As we conclude here, I just want to tie it into to a little future fulfillment as well of what this day fully pictures for us. That it has, again, past implications of the lessons of Israel and the, the covenants and God's connection to that. And it's important for us today as we go through each week to have this Sabbath. But its full implication connects to the future as well. If we begin in Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 16, we begin to see this. Hebrews 3 and verse 16 says, "For who, having heard, rebelled? Indeed, was it not all who came out of Egypt led by Moses?" So it begins by talking about the past. "Now, with whom was he angry 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose corpses fell in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear that they would not enter his rest, but to those who did not obey? So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief." So the writer of Hebrews here begins by talking about how Israel wasn't allowed to enter into the promised land at first. So they had to wander for 40 years through the wilderness. And he says it was because of their unbelief they couldn't enter into what he calls the rest. Then chapter 4 picks up, "Therefore, since the promise remains of entering his rest." So he jumps from there to, he says, and there's a promise still of this rest to come. He says, "Let us fear, lest any of you seem to have come short of it. For indeed the gospel was preached to us as well as to them. But the word which they heard did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in those who heard it. For we who have believed do enter that rest, as he has said." So he begins to say that they didn't have the faith as they heard about this rest that God promised. But he says we can enter that rest. And I think that's symbolic of us keeping the Sabbath now, of us entering that rest on a weekly basis. But it also has further implications from that as well. Because he continues on. It says, "For we who have believed do not enter that rest, as he has said. So I swore in my oath, in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest." It says, "Although the works were finished from the foundation of the world." So again, going back to the beginning of the creation, God had this plan of rest. And it says in verse 4, "For he has spoken in a certain place of the seventh day in this way." So all up until this point, he's been talking about just the word rest, about this rest that the Israelites weren't allowed to have, and that's been promised, and that's from the foundation. And he says, place talked about on the seventh day. It says, "And God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And again, in this place, they shall not enter my rest." So here the writer starts tying this idea of rest into the Sabbath, into the seventh day, showing that connection that there is more than just the past implications of the Sabbath and us keeping it now, but there's future implications as well. And then verse 6, he says, "Since therefore it remains that some must enter, and those to whom it was first preached did not enter because of disobedience." Again, he designated a certain day, saying in David, "Today, after such a long time, as it has been said, today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts." Again, he's kind of interjecting this idea that don't be like the Israelites who missed their opportunity to enter that rest. But he says today is the day to make that choice, to have the faith to enter that rest. And then he continues on in verse 8, "For if Joshua had given them rest, then he would not afterward have spoken of another day." So then he jumps not from them not entering with Moses, but after the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, Joshua does take them to the promised land, that land symbolic of that rest. But he says, "But if Joshua," in some Bibles that's translated Jesus, because that's the Hebrew word, Joshua is the Greek word for Jesus, says, "had given them rest, then he would not afterward have spoken of another day." There remains, therefore, a rest for the people of God. So this whole kind of convoluted discussion is connecting the Sabbath to the promised land back in Israel and how the Israelites missed it the first time because of their sins. And then Joshua finally took them to the promised land, but he says, but Joshua spoke of another rest, that there's still another rest coming, that the promised land didn't fulfill the promises, that there's such a better promise waiting that's connected to the Sabbath. So then verse 9 says, "There therefore remains a rest for the people of God. showing us that there's still a Sabbath to be kept today. And it's interesting as well, that word rest in verse 9 actually is the word sabbatismos. It means a keeping of the Sabbath. It says there remains a keeping of the Sabbath for the people of God. That the Sabbath hasn't been fulfilled. So God says there's still a Sabbath keeping to be had, because there's still future fulfillments of what this day truly represents. Then verse 10, for he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works, as God did from his. Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience. So then he ends with encouragement. He says, be diligent to enter that rest. So this whole section again goes back from the promised land, and that it was symbolic of rest. The Sabbath was symbolic of the promised land, but that wasn't the true fulfillment of this day. That its fulfillment in the end is that rest that God has promised us, the kingdom of God. And that we still keep the Sabbath today because there's still a fulfillment of that day. Again, I wanted to end with this idea that the Sabbath has a past idea that is present for us today, with a Sabbath keeping still to be done, and that it's future looking as well, looking to that rest that God promised us. That rest and that healing that Christ explained through the healing that he did. Symbolizing that the Sabbath is a day not only of rest, but a day of healing. A day of making people better. A day to give life. A day of good things. And it's such an amazing blessing as we view the Sabbath that day. That the Sabbath looks back, and it looks to the present, and it looks to the future. So as we keep God's Sabbath each week, let's remember and learn from the past. Let's enjoy and celebrate the present. And let's look forward and pray for the future.